Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
This episode was brought to you by our sponsors, TPL Connect. TPL Connect are specialists in the design and delivery of smart city and IoT technology projects. Offering consulting, design, and project management services, their strength is their ability to deliver your project vision and not a compromised one. They do this by working with you in the early stages of feasibility to detail your project vision, objectives, requirements, and scope. Then work with you to deliver the project through to completion and handover. Their team take the stress out of designing and delivering technically difficult projects by working on your behalf to deliver the original requirements and objectives of the project. TPL Connect, your project vision delivered.
Hello, Zoe. Welcome to the Smart Community Podcast.
Hi, Ellen. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Congratulations on 200 episodes.
Thanks so much. Oh, it's really weird. Like,
it's a big milestone.
I know. And you would remember episode one.
I do.
And I think it was me talking in episode one.
I think so, it was. It's a short one.
It's a short one. But yeah, can't believe it. We've made it to 200 episodes and we've actually got, 100,000 downloads, but we're over 105. So it's nearly 106 at the moment.
Strength to strength.
Thanks everyone for tuning in is, the important thing. Someone said to me, I was like, 100,000 downloads, whatever. They're like, it's pretty big considering some podcasts, a lot of podcasts, no one listens to at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so thank true. You for tuning in, everybody, smart community friends. Over the years, it's nearly been 3 years now?
Nearly been 3 years. Well, it has been 3 years since we were planning it at the cafe over breakfast.
Yes.
Like a good pair of millennials having our avocado toast.
Mm-hmm. And, long black.
Yeah, exactly. So it has been 3 years in terms of when we started planning it, not necessarily when it aired, when first episode aired, because the podcast birthday is in February. But it's been 100,000 downloads and we're now to episode 200. And so for episode 200, we are doing another Ask Zoe Anything. So I've got a list of questions here from the community. We won't probably get through them all, but we will definitely revisit some of them in the months ahead. So the first question, Zoe, I think is actually a really interesting one. It's a sort of amalgamation of three different people's questions. So Rachel Smith, who's been on the podcast, Kylie Nixon, who's been on the podcast, and Susie Gately. And they all asked, what can local libraries do to be more relevant, responsive, involved in promoting and understanding the smart city's philosophy for the benefit of the whole community, which I think is a great question.
Yeah, I really love this question too. And I got excited when Susie asked this specific question. Kylie and Rachel both were like, yes, that's awesome. And they asked similar questions as well. Yeah. So I put them all together. But it's such a great question. And it's actually some of the work I've been doing recently in my consulting business side of things and how we can really, or how I guess the old can become new again, right? And how libraries play such an important part in that inclusivity, particularly of all the different, socioeconomic groups, and how a library is really, I guess, can be, depending on where you are, the real center of a community and lots of things happen there. I remember my days at actually the school library rather than the public library. And I was never super into books, but they had other things too, right? They had games, they had events, they had, beanbags, which I thought was really cool back in the day. But also these days, libraries can play such an important part. And that's what Susie started her question off with, is how they can play that role. And on a practical sense, it involves a different way of thinking. Like I know some libraries are already doing this. And that's the thing. I don't want to underplay the work that libraries are already doing in this space. Mm. But things about digital literacy and really base level stuff, that's really important. So then people can actually continue to be in our or function well in our modern society, because so many services are online now. And even if you can go face to face, COVID showed us that, you know, we have to adapt and we have to change, and that those things now are online, or they're being, you know, pushed to be online as well. And I think it's really important for everybody doesn't have to know absolutely everything, but they need to know how and where and what they can access.
Yeah.
And I think also libraries can play a huge part in that access piece as well, not just to, you know, learning, but also devices. We've got books, but we've also got ebooks. You know, I've just signed up to Toowoomba Library.
Audiobooks.
On my phone, audiobooks, podcasts, I guess they're free, but most of the time. But yeah, audiobooks, 100%. You can, there's so many resources available out there. And yeah, I've got the Toowoomba Library app on my phone now, and now I am an e-library member. I'm actually cool. I'm not a physical member.
Oh, I am, but I'm not an e-member, so we'll, I might need to there do that.
Yeah, and I think also, like, now that I'm an auntie, I think about the things I could do with my nephew, and spaces that kids can go with their parents and they can learn things. Maybe the parents can learn things, the kids can learn things at the same time. And we want to really start that, I guess, that inclusion in technology, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be in a library, but we can start these partnerships. So one of the things I've got written down here is libraries partnering with other organizations, how that could look. Because I think for smart communities, it's not just going to be one, you know, organization. And Sean's question, which I haven't got down here, I don't think we'll get to that one specifically, but was
oh,
about
really?
Who else was yeah. going to be involved. Question. Another question. Oh, yeah. Sean had several questions, which I love. But yeah, and just who else we're going to, who else needs to be involved in this space. And so I think for libraries to essentially remain relevant and continue to, I guess, thrive in this space, it is about looking at different ways they could use that space, because that space is so valuable, right? Mm. And I think it's really important to tell your story. And I'll say that a few times throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. It's like what a library is doing in this space and really promoting that. So then people aren't just saying, oh, I wonder what the library is doing. They already know because they've read it, you know, maybe on the website or even on social media or different, getting involved in different things. And even attending conferences and that type of thing when we can, but also online, about this smart city, smart community space, just to continue to learn more, because everyone should be there, right? It's not an exclusive club. Sign up.
Not just for the tech guys and the local government, you know, digital officer.
Not at all. And I love talking to librarians and people that are working in that space, because they have so much knowledge and so many resources. And so then to get that action and get that practical side of things, I think is really important. And I think it's important to really, I guess, embrace what it means to have those digital services, which we were talking about, you know, the e-members and that type of thing. But also we don't want to lose, you know, all the good stuff that other people are really enjoying and that what people love about libraries and spaces where they can go, you know, safe spaces, spaces for learning. And also that libraries can be such multi-use spaces as well. So we can be a library by day, creative space by night, even, I don't know, pop-up restaurant or whatever it is. You know, none of that is super high tech, but you use technology, as we say, as an enabler, because maybe you have an online platform that you can book the space out and that type of stuff, which a lot of libraries are probably already doing. The other thing I think is really important is to start looking at data and start making decisions with data. What are people reading? Why are they reading it? What are the trends looking like? Is there a certain topic that's, you know, getting hotter or less or whatever? And there's so many things you could look at. And I think, you know, we can't really dive into all of those here today. But I think if we can use libraries as a space for learning, but also kind of testing out some of this stuff, right? Why not? You know, there's spaces for the community, and we could test and try these things. Maybe people can come and have a look and visualize the data, or have a look at sustainability. It was one of the other things I've got down here, that a lot of libraries, particularly new libraries, have all of these things built in, but maybe people don't know about them. Mm. You know, they're running on solar, They've got different features that are really smart. You know, they're reducing emissions and all those type of things. But I think the biggest thing I would say is we need to keep pushing about telling that story that we are, that it's not just about super high tech or whatever, but actually the smart in the smart community is about just not doing the way, you know, not doing things the way we've always done them. And I think also really embracing that people love libraries, right? And I've talked to lots of other people. I don't think it's let's reinvent, you know, some people might think they're old and daggy and no one goes there and all this kind of stuff and that they're only for people that, you know, read books or whatever. But I think we need to reinvent that narrative. And doesn't mean we have to call it anything else. It just means that we can change that story. So I think that such a great question. And I guess get involved in this smart community conversation. And thanks for this question, because that's really a start, but really telling that story. And I've got partnerships here, and I know I briefly touched on that, but also partnerships with different creatives and artists as well as that tech side of things, universities even. I mean, there's this whole ecosystem in communities that can work together. And yeah, I think really just embracing it as a space for the community rather than, oh, well, we're a library and we do this, but actually that multi-use space and what we're going to do. Once we can start, you know, in Queensland, I guess we can start going back into libraries and that type of thing and really, I guess, reinventing that narrative for the smart community space.
I love that. Okay. Well, so we mentioned Sean, and Sean Ordain has been on the podcast as well. And you said he's had lots of questions. The one we're going to answer today is this. So Sean asks, we hear a lot about what local governments and communities should do to be smarter, but what should they stop doing? Very important.
Yeah, I really liked this question as well. And Nicole Stevenson, who has also been on the podcast a couple of times, she had a similar question, which was, what doesn't belong in our smart communities? So to answer this question, I should go to Smart Cities for Dummies. I actually contributed to this chapter, which was the 10 pitfalls of smart communities or something like that. Let me read that.
Jonathan Rockenthal's book.
Yes. Oh, here we go.
Who's been on the podcast.
Who's also been on the podcast. Okay. Chapter 13, 10 smart city pitfalls to avoid. Yeah, actually, contributed to the base and wrote the base of this chapter. So we won't follow this directly, but I've kind of got a whole bunch of things here. So I'm just going to rattle through them. A lot of it is to do with, I guess, not focusing only on technology. And I know we talk about that a lot, but it's what we also have to appreciate it, that technology has an important role where it is needed. And I think that's a really, I guess, important distinction, because I know people talk about it's about the people, it's about the people. And then some other people are like, well, of course it's about the people. We need to talk about technology, but actually it's a combination. It's not one or the other. It's both, because it has to be, right? It has to be. And it's not about finding the new widget or whatever. It's actually about, well, what do we have available now, or what's available in the very near future that we should be looking at and testing and trialing, or, you know, putting into full scale production to make things more effective, more efficient, more sustainable, more accessible, more livable. But anyway, we'll start with making smart cities a tech program and putting IT in charge. That's directly from the book. So this is what we should stop doing, or what doesn't belong. That doesn't mean that IT shouldn't be part of it. They must be part of it. And I'm talking in a bit of local governments where you have your, you know, IT department and that type of thing, because you need to be working directly with them, because we do need that solid tech knowledge. It's not that they're leading it, but they're a very important stakeholder in this conversation, because we need to know what's possible and what's not possible. Because a lot of these things we talk about, you know, oh, well, it's going to solve all our problems and all this kind of stuff. And there are some very real limitations with technology that it can't do that. Or, you know, it can do this in a limited fashion at the moment, but it'll continue to improve. Or yes, we can do that, but we need this type of data, et cetera, et cetera. And you can only have those conversations with people that actually understand what's going on underneath the code or underneath the technology.
Yeah.
So it is really important. And I think it's something that probably gets skipped over a little bit. It was kind of like, oh, it's all about the technology. And then we went, oh, no, it's all about the people. But we can't forget that there's real skills that are required underneath this. So it's not just, you know, to make it really happen, right? To make it really, really actionable. And you need to bring everybody and I don't want to say everybody, but you need to bring the people, the stakeholders involved along the journey. So it's not just one or the other. Like we said before, it has to be both. And you only do that by having genuine, real supporting conversations, right? But anyway, the other thing with bringing IT in is that particularly in local government, there are so many systems that are already available that are underutilized, right? And I think if we don't understand like what the whole system is doing, then we put other systems and processes in place that aren't supported or, you know, that don't fit in with our legacy systems, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's a really important step there where we have to actually acknowledge what we have done in the past and what legacy systems, you know, we are dealing with and where we're going to invest.
So the stop doing there is stop tacking things on top without, like I said, acknowledging what's already there, what we're actually, you know, what maybe is being underutilized but is already there, and also maybe what's already there that needs to be the legacy systems that need to be worked with until we can, you know, transform them to something else.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, and another point that I have here is that sometimes we get so focused on being in the future that we forget all the good, you know, work that's been done in the past, even if it didn't have the best outcomes, or, you know, those have now shifted and changed. I think there's this polarization that happens where it's like, oh no, we can't do anything that we ever did before. Everything has to be new and, you know, whatever. And so I think the other one is stop saying this is the way it's always been done, but also not vilifying this either. So there are some good things that have happened, and maybe they made the best decision that they could at the time with the information that they have with the people available, but really building on those foundations. And, you know, this is, I mean, obviously every situation is going to be different. Everything's going to be case by case basis. But actually looking at that first before we go, oh, we need something new, we need something different, we need something completely radical. So I think, yeah, the stop is stop vilifying the past, but also we don't have to keep doing it like that anymore. The status quo can be shifted if we really want to. So on that note, it's like the stop is stop thinking this is only a, what's the word? Like, it's not just about like what is possible. It's actually about what's possible in our brains as well. It is a people problem in the sense of the people actually working on smart city projects. You need to be thinking a bit differently, right? Or a lot differently in a lot of cases. And that investment in people that are actually working on these projects and giving them the space, the time, the energy to actually do that, the resources to do that is really important. So I think that's probably the stop is that those quick wins or taking only quick wins, because this is a really long-term game. So that really short-term thinking, although we want some of those, you know, to kind of get ourselves rolling, but actually the stop is the short term, the go is the long-term game. And I think that's a really key one, because I know that it's, well, what's a return on investment? What am I going to find out after a year if I put this system or, you know, this technology in place, or we do things, you know, this way? The measuring and monitoring of it is so important, and I think not done well enough at all. There's obviously some people doing an amazing job in that space, but I think that's going to be something that's going to be bigger and better. Well, it has to be bigger and better for our smart communities. And I guess that goes, you know, for all projects, rather than just smart city technology ones. So the other one I've got here, stop thinking that we can do this without investing in new skill sets. So we touched on that a little bit earlier. So data tech, that they're important skill sets, and I don't think we should underrate those and undervalue those. And so we need more people behind the code, more diverse backgrounds, and not just what people's, you know, cultural backgrounds, but also where they've kind of come from. So regional thinking, we want people that, yeah, have lived overseas and have, you know, traveled here, or, you know, they're planning to go back or whatever, or they're from different ways of thinking. Maybe they've come from an arts background. I think that's really important, because if we don't invest in new skill sets, we just get more of the same, which has served us well in some cases in the past, but it's going to shift. It has to shift. It has to change. The more our lives become automated, the more systems become automated, the more decisions are being made by computers, the more humans we need behind those computers, making sure that those biases that we have as a human race are not are not exacerbated, that we can actually function properly in this new world that we're creating and that we continue to create and you know, happening now, where we can actually serve the greater good, I suppose, and have those inclusive communities. Because if we don't have more diversity behind the code, we can't build more diversity in front of the code, in the sense that we can't take in those experiences, those real experiences that people have and that are really important. So that's a passion of mine, if you can't tell. But also that tech and data and coding are really, they're important, and certain people will love that, right? They'll love getting deep into the code and doing these things. But the other ones that need, I guess, focus as well, and maybe even potentially more focus depending on what area it is the curiosity and creativity. And I think we spoke about this on the last podcast that we did like this. Yeah. And I have spoken to it many times. We don't just need people that are only thinking about the technology, but we need people that are thinking more holistically, but also that everyone has their own little part to play and that we can't do absolutely everything ourselves. So something I've learned recently, in particular, working on my master's, some of the things I can kind of do, but do I want to do them forever, or am I the best person to do them? Probably not. Maybe I bring the strategy and then I talk to somebody who's, you know, completely has been studying machine learning, or, you know, that's their jam to actually really get in there and design new, you know, ways of doing things and that type of stuff. But I can input in the logic. I can input in, well, how do we get this out to the people? I can input in, well, how do we communicate this on an accessible level? So there's all these different things that I can do that my skill set really feeds into. It's not that I can't learn new things, but I think it's about really honing in on what we really love to do and what we can do to contribute. So I think we need to stop thinking that we can do this without investing in new skill sets, but also stop thinking that we can do absolutely everything ourselves, and that there's different skill sets that we are going to bring to this conversation, but they all do have a place in our smart communities of the future. And I think,
and there's value in that diversity.
There's value. There's so much value. And it's the only way I see that we can move forward and actually combat some of the issues that we have in our world today. And I think if we really start to, and there's a question a bit later on around Joy Taylor's question, actually, and maybe we'll jump into that a bit later.
Yeah, I was going to do that one next. I'd already thought that would be a good follow-up.
Okay, let me just rattle off some tweetable answers, because I have a few more here in this question, but I realize we don't want to take up all the time. But so insufficient support and engagement from stakeholders is a big one. So we need to, I guess, stop under-engaging with our stakeholders, and that there's this new, very, like I often say, a radical level of engagement that will be required in the future, both with the community, but then also other people involved. When we have more partnerships, more collaborations, doing things a bit differently, you can't read the manual. Like, there's no manual on this, right? There's no set standard how you're going to do absolutely everything. So that's really important. And I really like this one. And it's, I think Jennifer Sanders spoke about this on her episode as well. It's like, stop limiting efforts to just your city or regional boundaries, that smart cities don't, or smart communities don't end at, you know, the boundary. Oh, well, this is Toowoomba and now that's Lockyer Valley. We actually need to work together. And I think that's easier said than done, but I also don't think it's impossible at all. The next one is, there's so many. I guess the other one, there's so many, but I won't touch on them all. But not telling your story is also something that we should stop doing. So we need to start spreading, talking about what we're doing, and not necessarily that we know everything, but the things that we've learnt along the way, so that other people can learn from them as well. One of the reasons I started the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, on that topic of diversity and new skill sets, Joy Taylor, who has also been on the podcast, has asked, what do you think we can do now to encourage more girls of all ages to learn the topics and skills required to be well positioned to be the pioneers of the technology and systems and designs that will create smart communities of the future? Good question. What can we do to encourage girls of all ages to get involved and to learn these skill sets?
Yes, I love this question. And again, some of the work I've been doing recently in my consulting side of things, which I'm, again, just loving. So there's a couple of aspects to this. I think we want more people from different backgrounds, like we talked about earlier. So we want different ways of thinking. And yes, we really want to start young, but it doesn't, and I know Joy specifically said of all ages, because you don't have to be, you know, young and have done this for ages. You know, I started off in engineering, road construction, right? And then I decided that I wanted to shift into this space.
Yeah, well, Joy's a great example herself. She's had a whole career in finance and then moved into the startup space and is now just this year really heavily invested in her skill set of coding. So yeah, it's absolutely not about school age girls necessarily. Like, it's women of all ages, really.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, Joy's a great example and I'm loving watching her journey. And particularly, in, you know, she's been doing coding and, you know, I recently clicked on her website that she made. And it's just, I think it's that lifelong learning. I think it's another thing we talked about, Ellen, on the last podcast as well.
Yeah.
And it's encouraging people to do that. I think it's interesting. So some of the work that I've been doing with the university, actually, one of the biggest, one of the themes, there was many themes, but one of them was confidence, like that their university degree gave them confidence to be able to do something. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but that you actually do need confidence to learn something different, right? Because you got to make a mistake and you got to do it wrong and you have to learn. And again, studying recently, I've had to relearn how to learn, right? Which is that you don't know everything and that's okay. And it doesn't matter what age or whatever you are or what your background is, but actually being really invested in your, I guess, invested in yourself enough to give yourself the chance to learn. And I think this does go down to the way that we work is changing, and that if we have that more flexibility to work, I should say, in different ways, that we can actually give ourselves time to do this. I think that's really an important one, because if we go into our, not everyone goes into a degree either, but if we just follow the traditional path, I guess like we're working so much that we don't give ourselves time to do that learning and in different fields as well. Because even if we say do a master's or something like that, a lot of the time it's the same field to get more and more deeply involved in that. And I think there's a place for that, and people will know whether that's their jam. But I also think that there's something in the future of the way that we're going to work, or the way that if we give ourselves that flexibility, that we can then, you know, shift and change the way we're doing things. But what we need to change, there's a self thing. So there's self-confidence, the self-belief that we can actually change and do things differently, and also deciding which way we want to go, that we don't have to be absolutely amazing at everything, but we can actually be amazing at many a thing, and that we can do many a thing these days, which is, I guess, what I was trying to get at, is that we don't have to just do one thing. And particularly when I was growing up, it was like, oh, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? But it's like, well, actually, the question should be, well, what are you interested in? What are you passionate about? What things do you want to be doing when you grow up or whatever? Because there's so many different things that we can be involved in, and we've got one life, and let's, you know, really, really live it and not just get, I guess, pigeonholed into one thing. But so that's one thing. So on this side of the fence where we can take control of what we want to do for ourselves and really instilling that in young people and young girls and people of all different backgrounds as well, really instilling that you can shift and change. But also, I guess there's a part where, and I do say this quite often, that you can't eat passion forever. So there is there's a sense, it's like you can't do everything for free all of the time. And so really thinking about that business side of things as well, whether you start your own business or whether you work for somebody else, that's really important to, I mean, I didn't figure it out for, you know, a long time and we're all still figuring it out, but actually realizing that follow your passion and doing all those things is great, but finding what you love and that you can, what you can get paid for, and you know, that will change over time and the amounts will change and that type of thing. but really thinking about those things as well, because we often talk about this, we can't eat passion forever. But then on the other side of things, we have to change the narrative of what science, technology, maths, engineering, what they actually do for the world. And I put education in that field as well. And that these are not exclusive of arts and being creative. I think that's a really important distinction.
Absolutely. And more so these days.
Absolutely. It has to be. And so we need to stop saying that, you know, I'm a math science person, so I'm not good at, you know, public speaking, or I'm only an artist. You know, we're really complex creatures and we can be all of these things in one, but also that can be quite overwhelming. So you want to keep that in mind, that we can be lots of things at once, but we don't have to be everything. And maybe for this chapter, we're this, or maybe we're this chapter, we're three different things. But I think it's really important. And that's kind of where I was trying to go with the new way of working. It won't just be one thing. We'll be doing multiple different things, but also when we are able to hone in on our skill sets, we'll work out what the best of us can be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, on that note, changing that narrative. So I've been doing some work with the university about modernizing engineering degrees, which is my background. And yeah, some of the strong themes, like I was talking about, confidence and having confidence in doing the work. So I've been doing some research and data analysis. And one of the really big themes is real world application and making a contribution to the world. And that's particularly relevant for first year students. Like that's what they're saying, that they want to contribute to the world. So I think if we can actually shift the narrative that, you know, as an engineer, you can create something in our community that will benefit people, or you can input into, fighting climate change, or, you know, you can, having a secure, you know, having water security, like these are the things that really matter to communities and to people, particularly, it's not even just necessarily city or regional or whatever, but actually that you can make a difference in your community where you live and potentially a global community as well, because, you know, we're all connected. So I think if we start changing that narrative that, like, I know when I was going through school, it was like, I loved math. And I love science. And all I could see were, you know, math and science, you know, in a lab or being a mathematician doing stats or whatever. But actually it's so much more than that. Like, you could, write an algorithm that goes into a machine learning model that, helps people with epilepsy detect, an epilepsy episode is coming on. Just one of my assignments that I've been doing. But there's so many things that we can contribute to. And I think if we sold that narrative better, then we can get more girls and people of diverse backgrounds involved in this. And I also love the work that Elke Education are doing. Shout out to Steph, who's also been on the podcast, and Andrea. And I think that we really want to, I guess, change the way that we're doing things, but also realize that there's this foundation, like we were talking about earlier, that we can build upon, and there's lots of work happening, but we need to continue to do more and more of it. And I'm also a strong believer in informal education, but that it doesn't end there and it can't end there. So we're not just learning how to learn, but actually learning for that application side of things. And I think that's a big thing around problem solving. We talk a lot about, solving problems, but solving real world problems that are really complex. You know, if they were easy, then we would have solved them by now, but they continue to shift and change. So I think having those skills is such, so valuable, those foundational skills, but then we can apply them to different situations. So just because you graduated as an engineer doesn't mean you're necessarily going to go work for a local government or, a government agency or a traditional engineering firm. There are so many other options, but actually having those skills that are transferable across the different, disciplines and areas. And I think we'll see more and more of that as we move into the future of people doing different things at different times. Then I think we can set people up to really thrive in the future of our communities.
Hmm. So it's telling that story again, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's a lot of it comes down to narrative, of, and the language we're using. And yeah, I find that if we only ever talk about, I guess, the very base fundamentals, then we can lose the application side of things. And I think that's the exciting part. But you need those fundamentals to then be able to build that into the application.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, cool. Well, great question, Joy. Thank you. Yes. So moving on, the next question, we've got three names here. So Debbie Reynolds, who has been on the podcast, Kari Sutton and Georgia Ether. And they've asked, what is coming up in 2021 and how can we help people understand that smart cities and smart communities are about improving quality of life?
Yes, great question. And again, I've mishmashed this one together. So for 2021, I mean, and beyond, I mean, I don't like making predictions too far out, but I did a keynote recently for LGITSA, so local government IT in South Australia, well, earlier this year, actually, during our COVID lockdown. And I've come up with 7 key predictions of why smart communities matter coming out of this time and beyond. And I know we don't have a lot of time left, so I'm just going to shoot through them. So 7, internet connectivity as a human right. So that digital divide, again, we've talked about this during COVID times, it really exploded. And we'll see a lot more of this digital activism that we need access to the internet so then we can function in modern societies. And I think basic digital infrastructure has to be included in, you know, these funding packages that we're talking about of, you know, big infrastructure. Digital has to have a seat at the table. The next is a Masters of Digital Leadership. So I think, you know, we'll see this formal education because it's leading in a digital world is very different. There are some skill set, lots of transferable skill sets, obviously, but we have to build trust in different ways. We have to use different channels in different ways. You know, there's different etiquette. There's different, what I call digital hygiene of how we can really function in this world. And I think we also need to foster inclusion in different ways. So I think we'll see this rise of digital leadership will be this thing that we're talking about a lot more and will have to be. Even as we start going back to, you know, physical interactions, there's going to be a push to be more digitally inclusive, which on both sides, right? You know, we need to people need to be able to access and understand. But also there'll be this push of, well, why can't I do this remotely? And I'm already seeing that in some of the work I've been doing. The next is a new era of access, which is, I guess, leading on from that earlier point, is you can access anyone, anywhere, any skills that you want or need. But on the flip side of that, then if you've got a strong internet connection, you can also be accessed anywhere and everywhere. And if you know how to use your device and connect to it, etc. And so I think we're looking at this being normalized, you know, during this time, but then how we can, I guess, foster this in the future. And I think people are, as we come back, we're really craving that human connection. But how can we, I guess, use digital to be more efficient, more effective? And then really once we have that, we've got the bases on digital, then we can really appreciate that face-to-face interaction a lot more than we did before. So talking about mobility, you know, won't just be physical. It's if we've got the digital literacy and we've got a job that it can be anywhere, that will equal mobility for us. So I think we need to think about mobility as physical and digital. And I think once we move this, there'll be a demand, right, for this more flexible environment, which, you know, we're already talking about before COVID, but now it's going to be a much greater, I guess, demand, but then also the balance, which I guess feeds into how you lead in that world as well and what should and shouldn't be digital and, you know, physical and those type of things and that hybrid approach moving forward. The next one is a smart life equals a real life. So you and your digital life are no longer separate. And I actually don't think they ever really were these days. But then how do we really protect this, protect our, you know, our digital footprint. There's so many things that we are doing in this digital world that affect our real lives, because it is, you know, one in the same. And I think there's a lot of more, there's lots of research that needs to be done. There's lots of ways of working that will be different. But also that, you know, digital isn't this thing that we do to take a break from normal life. We actually,
right,
you know, it's our real
life.
It is
our life. Yeah.
It is our life. And I think, how do we break from that as well? And how do we, particularly when we're working in this field all the time, and how do you have a digital break and all those type of things? So I've got here, you know, digital hygiene etiquette, which we talked a little bit about before. But there's actually a huge difference between being like digitally literate and delivering online and engaging online and being data literate. So there's so many different things and so many different skill sets that we've had to, you know, you and I probably, we remember a time without the internet just, but we've picked up these things along the way. But how do we do that? We have to do that in an accelerated sense when maybe we haven't been in this world the whole time. So I think there's going to be lots more conversation about that and how our digital and physical communities are colliding, and that they're just as important as each other. The next is tree change, now with Wi-Fi. And I know there's been quite a bit of work, and there's a campaign happening at the moment about moving to regional areas. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see this shift globally. And that we'll have this, you know, this is hyper focus on local for quality of life. But then also that connectivity to the outside world, the connectivity, strong internet connection. But can we have our cake and eat it too, essentially, without, still having these inclusive, communities and, you know, spaces that are safe and that we can travel around in, but also have that relaxed lifestyle in our regional area, that, you know, nothing's going to change. We don't have traffic, et cetera. So it's going to be really interesting. And it's not just going to be, you know, a certain demographic. It's not going to be just young people or, mature age people. It's going to be a whole range of things. So what things might need to change to either enable or support or make sure that we, I guess, people get the outcomes that they're after. Next is smart becomes boring. So we use smart things to solve boring problems, like making government processes more efficient, as you know, passion of mine. So, you know, we use AI and data to make decisions about energy efficiency, mapping out potholes and saving big dollars, essentially. And we see that return on investment. I think we'll start to see that real return on investment, so those benefits, and we can actually start talking about those a bit more, which is really important, right? And also, you know, things like affordable housing, employment, homelessness, climate change, poverty. How can we use these smart ways of thinking to actually solve some of these issues or work towards solving some of these really complex, big, wicked, ugly problems? I think that's going to be really fascinating, and something that will have to happen moving forward. 2021, yes, but beyond as well. And then the last one is, yes, of course, I know where my data is. And I think we'll start to ask these hard questions of where our data is as citizens, not just of government, but of the, you know, tech companies, big private organizations that are using our data for certain things. We'll see more things happening, you know, enforcement happening in this space all around the world. And so I think we'll become more data literate. And I think that's a good thing. We're talking a little bit about how to get people involved, you know, at the earlier stages, but, and that's really important. I think with this space, if we start to talk about, you know, tech and data and learning how sensors work and all this type of stuff, young people start asking these questions, because they'll understand how and why it's working. Whereas I think we've accepted it, it's come on board, and now we're just starting to catch up with the questions, you know, that we maybe should have been asking a long time ago. And it's not to say we'll do anything super differently. Potentially there may be some things that will be very, very different, but I think if we it's about being informed. And I think that's such an important thing. And one of the, you know, key pillars of a smart community is that informed, which is empowered and informed, is one of those, areas. And I think when we start, I guess, embracing or what's the word? Just, I guess, learning about how things work and, you know, the kids will start asking, why are we letting this happen? Or why aren't we asked about this? Or what happens if I do this? Where does my data go? And I think those questions will be uncomfortable at first. And the answers may be very uncomfortable, but we'll have to start, we will start doing that. And I think that'll be an evolution.
Mm.
So that's the seven key areas. We're running out of time because I have to have another podcast interview I have to do up next. But I know we're coming back to this again, but we need to continue to tell the story and get more people involved in the conversation and use that. This is kind of going to that, how do we help people understand smart cities and communities? Use language that helps people understand rather than sounds smart, and follow what's happening. Yeah. But also we can shape what's happening as well and really getting involved. And yeah, we need a broader range of tech folk, but also other people involved in this conversation so we can continue to ask these questions.
Well, that sounds like a nice place to wrap it up, Zoe.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you. With so many more questions here, but we will get to them in some fashion very soon.
Yeah. Well, congratulations again on 200 episodes of the Smart Community Podcast. Here's to 200 more.
Yes. And thank you. Thank you for being involved. It's been absolutely amazing. Couldn't have done it without you and the rest of my Smart Community team, of course. And, you know, we've learned a lot along the way, and I just think, if we can get to 200 more, we'll be, 200 and 200 and plus, we will continue to keep, I guess, being involved in this space, continuing to spread this message and making sure that people can share their story, but also learn from what other people are doing in this space.
Yeah.
So important.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me, Ellen.
You're welcome.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.